Chapter 1, The Fourfold Blessing. Bezalel Vormser was deeply disappointed. He had been glad yesterday to see his brothers drive up the cobblestone streets of Worms, Germany, returning to their home. He had greeted them with tears in his eyes, hugged them, and kissed them warmly. Their father, Rabbi Chaim Vormser, had also been grateful to see them back, and their mother had embraced them joyfully, praising how wonderful they looked and how adult they had become. Only Bezalel's sister, who was already married and living in Krakow, was not with the family. She had just given birth to her first child, Aryeh Leib, and could not travel. Soon after the family finished dinner, Rabbi Chaim sat down at the study table with his two sons, Yaakov and Helman. Bezalel sat down at the end of the table. Rabbi Chaim's wife sat at a chair in the room and listened proudly to her grown sons. It seemed like only yesterday that they had been born and had learned to toddle across the room. These were boys whom she had cleaned, who had stumbled over their first olive bays. She had made their meals, mended their clothing. She had soothed them, nursed them through illnesses, rebuked their mischievousness, and then she had sent them away from home. How hard it had been to see them leave. She had worried so much for them. They needed her so much. Yet she knew that they had to grow up. And now they were back. Tall, bearded young men, Torah scholars who had studied with the greatest rabbis in Poland. Rabbi Chaim stroked his mustache. "So, we will hear how you learned in the Beis Midrash of Rabbi Shlomo Luria," he said. "What is it that they call him?" "The Maharshal," Yaakov volunteered. "Oh, yes." Rabbi Chaim opened the volume of the Talmud, swung it around so that it faced his sons, and pointed to a Tosfos. Yaakov and Helman read the Tosfos together in a sing-song chant, and soon they were discussing it enthusiastically with their father. But Bezalel remained silent, and sorrow filled his heart. 3 years before, he and his two brothers had told their father that they wished to go to Poland and learn with the great Rabbi Shlomo Luria. Rabbi Chaim had said that only two could go. Yaakov and Helman had left, while Bezalel had remained at home with his parents. Bezalel had accepted this with good grace. It was the will of his father and the desire of heaven. But now, as he listened to his brothers discuss the Tosfos, Bezalel realized that they were missing subtle points that were obvious to him. It became clear that although they had learned in one of the greatest yeshivos in Europe, and he had had to remain behind in Worms, his mind had a native sharpness that they lacked, and now he felt crushed. Why had they merited to go learn, while he had been forced to remain behind in Germany? Bezalel entered into the discussion. He made a sharp point, bringing a clever proof from a seemingly unrelated source. His argument was fresh and unexpected, but once stated, seemed obvious and irrefutable. When his brothers raised objections, Bezalel easily showed the errors in their logic. Bezalel was so sharp, so eager to best his brothers, that the debate heated up. Yaakov and Helman replied vigorously to Bezalel's attack, and they began to gain the upper hand. Their years of training began to show. They brought proofs from texts that Bezalel had never seen or did not recall. They introduced some of the new forms of logic that they had learned in Rabbi Luria's yeshiva, to which Bezalel was unaccustomed. A few times, Bezalel launched a counterattack based on his mental acuity, and his brothers had to scramble to counter his offensive. But in the end, the training of Bezalel's brothers told. They buttressed their interpretation of the Tosfos with proofs and arguments that Bezalel could no longer contradict, and he yielded to them the victory. Rabbi Chaim had listened with delight to his son's vigorous and brilliant excursus through the Tosfos. They were still young, but they were already formidable Torah scholars, especially Yaakov and Helman. He was sure that they would attain high rabbinical posts. As for Bezalel, the boy had a sharp head on his shoulders, that was for sure, but he lacked the training necessary to become an outstanding authority. "Excellent," Rabbi Chaim said. "I am pleased with all three of you. Yaakov and Hellman, you have fully justified your stay at Rabbi Luria's yeshiva. As for you, Bezalel, although your learning is somewhat rough, you more than held your own. Your brothers have the advantage over you in learning, but they cannot match your sharpness and your logic." Bezalel could no longer keep his thoughts to himself. "Oh, Father," he burst out, "if you see that I am sharper than Yaakov and Hellman, why did you send them to the yeshiva and keep me behind? I wanted to learn the Torah so much. Now I have to get married and raise a family. For the rest of my life, I will never have the opportunity to make myself what I could have been." The room fell silent. What could anyone say? How could anyone give Bezalel back the gift of becoming a Gadol Hador, a leader of the generation? Rabbi Chaim's face turned sad and tender. "How can I answer you, my son?" he said. "Only two of my sons could go to Poland, and I could not predict who the best students would be. But you know that the essence of learning Torah is bringing Torah down to one's students and children. The Torah that your children learn will be in your merit." Rabbi Chaim stood up and told Bezalel, "Stand." When Bezalel got up, Rabbi Chaim put his hands on Bezalel's head, as though to bless him. Seeing this, Rabbi Chaim's wife and his other two sons also stood. They knew that Rabbi Chaim was a holy man and that his blessings would come true. "While your brothers went to Poland to learn Torah, you remained behind to help me and your mother, one of the greatest and most difficult mitzvos of our Torah. In the merit of your having fulfilled that mitzvah, may God cause four lights to come forth from you." Rabbi Chaim leaned over and kissed Bezalel on the head. "Thank you, Father," murmured Bezalel. After this, the years passed swiftly. Yaakov and Hellman both attained high rabbinical positions. Yaakov in particular attained a great post, first becoming Rabbi of Worms, and many years later, in 1550, Chief Rabbi of Germany. Bezalel's nephew Aryeh Leib grew up and became a great and famous rabbi in Krakow. In the meantime, Rabbi Chaim and his wife passed away. Soon after Bezalel received his father's blessing, the non-Jewish population of Germany, and of Worms in particular, resumed their anti-Semitic attacks. "The heart of a man is evil from his youth," say the Proverbs, "but it is an unusually vigorous persistence that has enabled the hatred of Jews to accompany not only the youth, but also the maturity of the jealous neighbors." Bezalel left Worms and came to Posen, Poland. Poland was, at that time, under the influence of humanist philosophy and of a king interested in the economic benefits that the Jews could bring with them. Thus, the Polish Jews were somewhat spared the anti-Semitism of the church and the merchants and lower-class nobility in the cities who feared Jewish competition. In consequence, Poland was to enter its golden age. Posen was a major center of Jewish refugees from Germany. At the time that Bezalel moved there, Posen had 134 Jewish households and a total Jewish population of about 3,000. Although this seems very small today, in those days this was a sizable concentration of Jews. But Posen had more than just a quantity of Jews. It had a large number of outstanding Torah scholars, and Posen became a center of Jewish learning. Meanwhile, Poland overall had a Jewish population of about 50,000. Here, Bezalel married, and just as his father had predicted, he had four sons, each of whom was great in Torah and fear of God. The oldest son was Rabbi Chaim. Later to become a student of Rabbi Shachna of Lublin and a comrade and study partner of Rabbi Moshe Isserles, the Rama, Rabbi Chaim went on to become Rabbi of Worms and the author of Vikuach Mayim Chaim and other works. The second son was the most famous and perhaps the greatest. He was named after his great-grandfather, Rabbi Yehuda Loa, who had been famous as a holy man. The elder Rabbi Yehuda Loa had come to Worms, Germany from Prague in what was then Bohemia and what is now called Czechoslovakia. Bezalel's son, the younger Rabbi Yehuda Loa, would eventually move back to Prague. Yehuda is compared in the Chumash to a lion, and Loa is the German for lion. After he became famous, Rabbi Loa was known by many names. His great contemporary Rabbi Yaffe, the Lavush, called him the Ari, lion in Hebrew, not to be confused with the Ari of Tzifas. In Germany, he was known as Der Hohe Rabbi Lev, the great Rabbi Loa, but the name by which he has come to be known is the Maharal of Prague. The name Maharal is an acronym for Morenu Harav Loa, our teacher, Rabbi Loa. After the Maharal, the next brother was Rabbi Sinai, who eventually became Rosh Yeshiva in Prague and afterwards of Beis Din in Nikolsburg, Moravia. He was also noted for his knowledge of history, and he became a teacher of Rabbi David Ganz, who was also a student of the Maharal. Rabbi David Ganz is known for his pioneering work of Jewish history, Tzemach David. The Maharal's youngest brother was Rabbi Shimshon, who became chief rabbi of Kremnitz, Poland.